Hello and welcome. My name is Paul Bell Chambers, and this is the first full podcast of my Food and Music on the Isle of Wight series. And this one is called Flower Power. And there's a fairly good and obvious reason why that is. And that is because today I'm talking to Sally Chaucer, who owns the watermill at Calbourne. And it has a long and distinguished history, first mentioned in the Domesday Book, and it may even go beyond that as a site, a historical site of interest for milling flour. So there's a lot of history there. And if you look at the watermill at Calbourne's website, they have a history going back to 1086, which they then plot all the way through to 2000, which when Sally and her husband Tony bought the mill when it came up for sale. I won't go into all the details because that's Sally's story, and Sally tells it really so much better than I ever could. And you'll get a complete her passion. You'll hear the passion she has for this place and what they do there, and the products, the flour that they produce from local grain is absolutely wonderful, and it's a lovely selection of soft white flour through to wholemeal, and there's rolled oats and muesli and all sorts of other wonderful products that they produce out of what they do there at the watermill. The one I like particularly is the soft white flour, which I use to make shortcrust pastry. And there's a short video on my website at paulbellchambers.com under podcast, I think it is, if you have a look down the site map. And there is a little video there which is me having rolled out some pastry that's been made from this the soft white flour, and it's the best ever soft crust pastry that I've ever made, because it's such a lovely fine product. It's absolutely gorgeous. So without further ado, I will hand over to my recording of our interview, which was actually on site at the mill, and they have other things available there. There's a tea room. It's used as a venue for weddings and things like that, and they have holiday homes that you can book. So there's some eco houses, and when Tony, her husband, and Sally bought it in 2000, they've kind of gone at it to make it more sustainable, more eco-friendly and all that sort of thing. So we were in one of these eco houses, and that's where we had the conversation about the watermill. And I hope you enjoy it, because I think it is a fascinating place and well worth a visit. And you can obviously get the products there, but you can also buy them locally in a lot of shops around the island. So I'll hand over to Sally, and we'll go through the interview as part of this first podcast. So thanks for listening and enjoy. Hi, so I've come here today to the watermill at Calbourne. I'm meeting Sally Chaucer, and Sally's with me now. Would you like to introduce yourself, Sally?
Hello, Paul. Lovely to have you here. Yes, I'm Sally Chaucer from the watermill, a working watermill, the last working watermill on the island. We've never stopped milling, and we have in the past produced 50 tonnes of flour and oats a year, and so we're really living the dream, as millers would say.
That's great. That's good news. Yes, having visited you before, I know the watermill is here, and that's fabulous, because that's a part of the heritage this country is losing quite quickly, and yes. It's nice to see it still operating here. I guess my first question is, how long have you been here at the watermill, and what's the story behind it?
Well, in 1999, my cousin came into our kitchen and said, "Oh, they're selling the watermill." And my husband, Tony, said, "We've got to buy that or it will be gone." So me, being the you know, I don't know, very good wife, perhaps, I don't know, but I said, right, okay, yes, darling, we'll buy the watermill, which was no easy feat. I begged, borrowed, did everything I could, and I often say I sold my soul to buy here for him, and because he felt that it would go, and the only other people that were interested would have changed it into a private house, so yes. And then from then onwards, we worked very hard. We took it from being starting to go downhill and only milling a small amount, still milling, but only milling a small amount and milling animal feed, to then building it up into the tourist attraction where it was open every day, milling 6 days a week with talks and discussions. We had 60 to 70 schools coming. But we also then added in that other layer of it because we've got this ancient water power. And then my husband was very interested in green issues. So we included solar power and wind power sort of displays in about 2002, which sort of gave a whole nother educational element to it. And of course, we have the museums as well, which he was always known at auctions for. He'd be standing at the back and they'd always go, Mr. Chaucer, would you like to buy this for a fiver? So he was always at auctions buying things and stocking up the museum as well.
Oh, that's interesting. So how long have you been here?
Since 2000.
Right,
so it took me about 9 months to finally, you know, get the funds to do it.
You know, I did ask if you had some songs that were important to you and why. So if you'd like to give me your first song and reason it's important to you.
Well, the first song is Love Me Tender by Elvis Presley, because it's very much, you know, my husband and I, and he died in 2016, so I wanted to have this song so that you had the taste of love that we had together.
So having spoken to Sally about the mill, we went on to talk about the period from when they bought it with Tony and the children, and you know, it was great to hear her first song, which Elvis, and we'll hear some more of her songs after the next question. So let's get back to Sally. So having been here now over 20 years, what makes the watermill important to you? You know, you obviously got the background with your husband and the reasons for buying it, and it's just interesting, sort of caught the early stages of, you know, sustainability and going, producing clean energy and that type of thing.
Yes.
So, but over that, you know, what's it all meant to you?
That is the important thing. I think it's not just important to me, it's important to the world. And people always laugh when I say that, but it is important to the world because we have, if you look at the landscape history here, it looks like that we're probably the first watermill on the island. There's Roman agriculture here, so it's not unlikely that there was a watermill here in Roman times. The ancient footpaths and that are shown in ancient maps and just on the landscape, they're like a web that come to this location, and you've got the long stone, you've got the barrows, so it could even be further even longer ago than that. Then you come to Viking times. Vikings are known to have watermills. And the landscape here is just perfect for a watermill. You've got a combination of sand and clay. So the sand, the soil would be moved to a side. You'd have easy clay bases creating these cauldrons of water that would store the water. And then when needed, could roll over a wheel, creating power. Now we're talking power, so then we would have been talking perhaps one man power, one horsepower, whereas a water can create 5 horsepower very quickly, very easily. So you're talking power as now. It was so important. And then you've got the evidence of the watermill being here in the Domesday Book, 1087. Right. So it's all in the Domesday Book, and it was a big mill then with a malt house. And what we have today here is we have stones that they would have used in the Norman times and Roman times that mill fine flour, and then we've got other stones which I'll explain in a minute to you too. But then, with the advent of the Corn Laws in the early 1800s and the feeding of the Industrial Revolution, we found here there was a change in milling, and here what they did was they put in an Industrial Revolution roller mill, and it's one of the cutting edges of Industrial Revolution machinery for milling. And unlike anywhere else, we still have it, it still rolls. And that's what makes us so unique, where we go from real ancient history to Industrial Revolution history, showing how the Industrial Revolution was fueled. People, you know, more bread was needed, more flour was needed. And then you can also see the development from water to coal. We have a standing engine that was coal that would run the roller mill as well when there wasn't enough water, because there's such high demand for flour, and then to diesel and gas. And we've got all that here in situ, showing, educating from ancient to modern, the journey of food, of wheat.
Yeah.
From one to another, and include, and of course, the journey from water power all the way to.
I mean, that's a fascinating history, and there aren't many places in the world that probably have that. I mean, I can attest to the fineness of the flour. I've certainly used it, and it's quite noticeably one of the finest, the soft plain flour that you have.
I found it
really good to work with to make pastry. So brilliant that is. So thank you for that, and. I hope people will take a bit more of a look at the history, because I think that's one of the most fascinating parts of a business like yours in terms of producing food, because everybody thinks of the end product, but where it's all come from actually is quite amazing, and it's quite a wonderful story.
Yeah, and what I love about it is it's our history.
Yeah.
It's not the history of some wealthy royal family or, you know, wealthy families. It's the people's history. We would have eaten bread. That's what we would have lived on. And we would have grown our wheat. You know, if we go back to Norman times, the strips, we would have grown our own wheat. We would have brought the wheat to the mill to be milled or have a hand mill. And it's about our history, the ordinary people's history, the backbone of everything, the community's history. And I think here, you know, I'm possibly biased, but I really think here should be a World Heritage Site. When you look at other World Heritage Sites and you see the history there, this could really be a World Heritage Site, which would be wonderful for the island.
Yeah.
And it, again, you're looking, you know, with a combination of Carisbrook Castle and Osborne House and all the other wonderful attractions that we have on the island, you really have this amazing history that stayed here, because unlike other places, you know, after the war, and, you know, in Victorian times it was so prestigious, and then sort of after the war it sort of went into a small hibernation period. Yes. Which has kept
that's lovely, thank you.
But I didn't answer your question why it's important to me. And when we bought it, it was Tony and I's sort of working together to achieve something. It's like his legacy, really. And the same with the children. You know, they didn't want, we were selling and after he died, but they want to be able to keep it to make sure that we can actually produce something of it. So it's
in memory of him.
My next song is Sway by Dean Martin, because there's nothing like dancing around the kitchen to Sway with old Dean Martin.
Well, after a bit of dancing around the kitchen with Dean Martin, I went on to talk to Sally about the what the mill do and what it does and what they mill and the flour products that they produce. So we'll listen to more from Sally now. So I certainly notice when I'm out and about that I see your bags of flour in some of the shops around the island, which is great to see. So in terms of producing the flour, what processes does it go through to become a bag of flour? And then, you know, how have you got the bags out to the retailers? How have you done your marketing and so on to them?
Well, we used to buy flour, we used to buy our wheat from a next door farm. But we tend to get our wheat from the grain group. So that's all the island farms getting the wheat from grain group. And they're brilliant with us. They're very good. And so was the farm next door. But they started to grow other things. So yeah, we weren't able to have their wheat.
Yeah.
But so we buy as local wheat as possible.
Mm.
And then it's stored in bins at the top of the mill. Then it goes down into through a chute, down into the hopper. From the hopper, it goes down a shoe into, and then the shoe sort of goes from side to side by something called a damsel, which must have been a wonderful invention at the time, because there used to be sort of the shoe is like a little chute, and it used to be sort of knocked from side to side by a little girl from the village to keep the flow of wheat as a steady flow down into the stones. But the damsel has like three teeth, they're called three tongues, and chatters, and that's the familiar noise.
That, and clatters it, and pushes it. Chatters. That's interesting.
And it's funny, it's called a damsel, but anyway, chatters and goes from side to side. And then the wheat has a steady flow down to the between the stones. You've got a bedstone that's stationary, and then a running stone on top. And each of the stones is cut with harps, which are like little furrows, and they have to be cut every so often, dressed every so often. And when you lift the running stone up, if you stop milling and you lift the running stone up, you can see this wonderful gradient of wheat from the centre of the stone to the outside where it's flour. And it's so beautiful through these furrows.
Right.
Yeah, it's really lovely. Interestingly, each area has their own design of furrows and harps.
I never knew that.
And then it's gathered up in the skirt, and it goes down the chute into the bag downstairs. Yeah. But downstairs, you turn the water on, which is just a case of just lifting a lever and letting the water flow over the wheel. And then downstairs we're able to lift and lower the running stones, so we're able to make the flour finer or coarser depending on what we're milling as well. Then it's bagged up and all by hand, and everything. And then we also sell online as well, so we have our online shop, and then we deliver using our van as well. So
that's how it,
and we really are incredibly grateful for all the support all our wholesalers give us and all our online sales as well. It's what keeps us going, and we're always grateful, and we work very closely with them, and they're all so supportive of us.
You correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you've got about sort of 8 to 10 sort of different types of flour.
Oh, yes. Yes. So, as I was saying earlier, we've got two types of stones. We've got the stone that you would have had Roman times, which is mills the whole wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So it mills it fine wholemeal. So when you'll find a hot fine wholemeal, and we can add to that, we have a way of adding to that sort of other grains. We have a miller's malty as well. So we have our fine wholemeal, our miller's malty. And they're the Derbyshire grit stones.
Right.
And then we have French birstones. Now, French birstones are more glassy, and they came from a mine outside of Paris, because there's no Derbyshire grit stone anymore.
Yeah.
There's no French birstone anymore outside Paris. And these stones were cut into shapes and then exported down on barges across to the Thames, and at the side of the Thames they would then cut them to fit our millstone shape, stick them together, and then bind them with like cartwheel rings. And so you'll see those familiar rings around the, and so these stones were cut millstones were cut and bound, and I think were stuck together with like plaster of Paris, because you can see the stones all cut. When you get two of these milling together, the glassy substance of the stone means the husk of the wheat is rolled flat. You get large flake wholemeal. So we then have large flake wholemeal. Then, and that's, we think that's possibly how the Normans, that's a sort of more like a Norman way of doing it. So, but then what happens is you can sieve, and we call it dressing the flour. We dress the flour and we take out the bran flakes. We can take out the mids and semolinas, which is our biscuit meal. So you have bran, biscuit meal. And then we end up with two types of flour. We have the white flour. Mm. And then we have what we call our Calborne white flour, which is what we use in our tea rooms, because there's not an awful lot of that, and it's slightly in between. And this white flour has had bran, mids and semolina sieved out of it to produce this fine white flour from the millstones.
Right.
Which is and then, of course, which we don't do, that is the development of the white flour to where we went to with the roller mill in Victorian times to have this fine white flour. Mm-hmm. So in the Industrial Revolution with these fine white flour, you remember the cucumber sandwiches with the vicar, with your fine white flour, and because the wealthy people would have had this very fine white flour. But the trouble with the fine white flour, all the goodness, and it's rolled on metal rollers, all the goodness is taken out of it, because it's milled and sieved 6 to 8 times, so that we're going back to the Victorian times, turn of 1900s. And stories like, I don't know if you know the Secret Garden, so the little boy there is probably got rickets, and he's probably got rickets because he was fed this lovely fine white
The diet wasn't as full of nutrients as it should have been.
No, and of course then they started to realise that the increase of rickets, and so we saw, and they also put it down to not milling on stones, and that's why the stone flour is so popular. And then, of course, in the war, we had your recipe for flour. Please stop me if I'm boring
you.
So you, in the war, you ended up with a recipe of flour. Before the war, we imported wheat from all over the world. Australia. There was an Australian grain run. Well, we've all heard of the tea clippers. There was an Australian grain run, and that would happen in the 30s, and people would bet on the grain run from Australia. Then we had it from America and, of course, Canada. And you'll know of the convoys being blown up over the Atlantic. Argentina, it was being imported from all over the world to support our growing population. And so your recipe of flour before the war, you'd find fresh water. The baker might say, right, I only want Australian wheat. Don't want anything else, just Australian wheat. So your bread would taste different in Australia, in fresh water, to how it would taste in Newport, where the baker would say to us for his flour, the recipe for his flour, he might say, well, I want 10% homegrown wheat, which was considered inferior, 50% Canadian wheat, and 40% American wheat. So the bread in Newport would taste different because the flour tastes different. And so then when you had the war and we had the convoys being stopped, you couldn't really import the wheat from, although was still coming a bit from Australia, and the most of it, I think 90% of it, was homegrown wheat, which was quite must have been a strain on the farmers. No wonder they were farming every part. And they also got us to add chalk and other things to it as well to compensate for the lack of the stones that's doing it. So the bread, wherever you went, tasted the same. So wherever you were, and it also, I'm told, had a particular colour to it. So after the war, little mills like us, they went on for a while, but after the war, big companies like Rank were able to buy up all the wheat, We could only buy wheat from the bigger companies, and small mills like this were paid to stop milling. And because they were paid to stop milling, they couldn't get the wheat as well. Suddenly you ended up with, like, we've got our roller mill is three stories, but there were other mills that would have been bigger than ours, because ours is one of the first. And of course they would just be stripped out for a use, for other uses. And that's why you don't see roller mills, and certainly not roller mills attached to water mills, anywhere else.
That is interesting. It's a lovely story, and I'm learning something new every day, every time I talk to you. So that's fabulous. Thank you very much for that.
The next song is Brave by Ella Henderson. And when Tony died, this song just inspires that courage to keep going. And I'm sure anyone who's suffered any type of grief can relate to that.
Well, having talked to Sally about what the mill does and how it works, and again part of the history as well, which I still find fascinating every time I visit there, it's an amazing place. We got on to the actual products that they offer and what else the site offers in terms of other things such as a venue and a cafe and so on. So this is a little bit more from Sally about the extended things that the watermill offers to its customers and clients.
I know you don't just do the flour, you do other products as well, but you also have, as you mentioned earlier, the museum and the various other things that go on, and the cafe as well. So
yes,
just tell us a little bit about what else you do.
Offer.
Yeah.
We also do our porridge oats, milling our porridge oats, which is on a roller separate.
I can recommend them.
Yeah.
I use them a lot.
They're lovely, aren't they? And I've had people tell me that that's the only thing they can eat when they're ill as well, because we cold roll them.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, there's a difference to how other companies roll them. Yeah, the heat
will.
Yeah, so, and we also do our mueslis as well. And I live off passion oat muesli. We have our museums. We're open from just before Easter to November. We'd like to be open to Christmas, but it's getting people in. So we're always working on how to extend the season. So it's a tourist site, so you can come to the grounds and see the mill and see the museums and the tea rooms as well, which again we're always working on to try to get better. We do weddings as well. We have a venue for weddings, and we have a campsite, so most welcome to come and camp with us. And we have our holiday homes, so we have 5 eco holiday homes, 2 mill cottages, so a riverside and mill cottage, and we have a mill house as well, which is next to the mill, sort of in the centre of the site. We also have woodland walks, and we met with the Environment Agency as well, but mostly we maintain the riverway and make sure everything's around, so you've got all the nature and the amazing biodiversity of nature here. We, as I said, we're very much into alternative energy as well. So our future plans are to be able to show people perhaps how they can have get their own alternative energy, some simple projects, and ideally we'd have more solar panels and things like that, which we're always working on.
Yeah, that always helps. And I think I remember last time I was here, is there a group, Muddy Boots, do they?
Yes, yeah, there are.
User of facilities.
Yes, our little school. Nursery school that is all outside. Yes, she's here as well.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's good. I think that really goes part of the community.
The next song is a Legendary by Welshly Arms, and this is our theme tune at the moment, because we're no longer just going to maintain or get better. We're going to be legendary.
That's a lovely sentiment.
Right, so I haven't spoken to Sally at these business courses. That's where we met back in the autumn. And having come to the mill a few times, I'm fascinated by it, because I think it's just wonderful how it has all this history from, as I say, well before the Industrial Revolution and beyond. So it's a fascinating place. And I was also fascinated by Sally's interest in how business can benefit the community, and that's certainly very much part and at the heart of what she does at the Watermill. So this is Sally talking about community and business working hand in hand.
So I know that when I first met you, you were talking about one of the big passionate things you're interested in is the community, especially from a business standpoint, and how that can work together for the benefit of the wider community here on the island. So just give me a little bit of your thinking behind all of that.
I think business and community are one. Mm. When you actually think who we employ and we're only ever one person away from someone we know, or if you can put it, we're only ever two people away from someone we love, perhaps, yeah. on the island. We're such a close-knit community. So if a business is doing well in Ventnor, so we are all doing well. If a business is doing well in Cowes, we're all doing well, because it has a major influence on us all. So, and I've also found within, especially after lockdown, that whenever anyone's here, they're part of the community of our life, of our business. And in this way, businesses work together, community works together, and it's so important to support each other with that. And you were asking me also about ideas, and one of the things that I'd really would like to happen, I don't know how it would happen, would be that island produce that is would be subsidised in some way. So that for islanders it's cheaper for them. It's very hard for us to compete with other flowers, but if islanders knew that they were getting a good quality local product, and it was as subsidised as it could be, it would be lovely for islanders or visitors that are actually coming here to buy it here. And so I was wondering if there's a way we can do that. But I think the biggest thing about the community that is in my mind is that we've been awarded, and the island has been made a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve, which is a fantastic thing. It's a recognition from the world and from UNESCO that we are working as a community, and it is working towards making sure that our environment is looked after, our places are looked after, and our people are looked after. So it's about every single, it's an award to every single person on the island who lives on the island as well, that we all work as a community and we all support and help each other, and not help the environment and help the places. And in my mind, I can see how this is going to lift the standard of living, lift the wages up. And so instead of us being a poorer part of the UK, that we will be, back to Victorian times, recognised as having this amazing environment, amazing culture. I think over 50% of people who are earning on the island are earning from some artistic or cultural thing. So, and in this way, we can start to lift the island into a better position. And
I think that particular thing, the biosphere, is something that I don't believe many people on the island are that much aware of. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I think it's something that needs to be shouted about a lot more. So
yes.
I'm with you on that one. I think we need to get that message out further and really try and make sure we get everybody on the island aware of what it is and what it means, both for them and then for the wider community and the island as part of the UK and the rest of the world. I think that's an important thing.
And I think to know that it belongs to them.
Yeah.
It doesn't belong to anyone else.
And I don't think anybody's really sort of had that message, unless I've missed it completely. I know I've only been on the island for a couple of years, but I really didn't know about it until about 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
So, and I tend to look at what's going on. I spend a lot of time Googling and the internet. But there we go.
The schools are doing things so the children are more engaged. I think
you're right.
Things.
Yeah.
And. Yes, it's a way to unite the whole island and the coast It's a way to unite environment and all that everyone does on the environment. I mean, every time someone picks up a piece of litter, they're helping the biosphere.
Yeah,
every
absolutely.
Time you smile at someone, you're helping the biosphere.
I couldn't agree more.
And it's that real community spirit that can help to bring it about. And I think that it's also making sure that people are put before money. We've been seeing how money has been put. We've been in a culture where money has been the be-all and end-all. And with something like the biosphere, we're saying, no, it's those simple ways of helping each other that doesn't require money. We don't need to monetize everything we do. Otherwise, I'd be earning an awful lot of money from smiling at everyone.
Yeah, well, probably we should be paying for that.
Oh, good.
That's the end of the interview and the time I had with Sally, and I'm very grateful to her for giving me that time. I find the mill, as I said, fascinating, and I think what they're doing there is they're to be commended on, because they're maintaining some really old history that represents how clever or resourceful, however you want to put it, the human race can be by creating machinery that enables them to improve their lives. And you know, creating flour has done a lot to moving us forward. Some might argue it's done some things that are not so good, but you know, it's one of those basics that we all know and love. Bread, cakes, that type of thing, we all have been brought up with those, and that flour is that essential part of all of that. So thanks again to Sally. I hope you found that fascinating. I certainly did, and I think it's well worth a visit. So if you're coming over on holiday, or you're just here and you want something to do, then there's certainly plenty to see and enjoy at the Watermill at Calbourne. Moving on from that, as I said earlier, I did put together a little video. You can find that on paulbellchambers.com/food-and-music-iow-podcast -the-water-mill. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's there. It's on the far right hand side drop down. I think you'll find it there, and it's a little video about making a quiche using the soft white flour from the mill, and it's fabulous pastry, and I enjoy the rolled oats. I certainly use that to make things like a base for a chocolate torte, that type of thing, and I've enjoyed a few bowls of porridge this winter just to keep me going, so I can thoroughly recommend the products there. So getting back to the podcast, really what it's about is about finding out about the characters and the people behind the food and drink and the hospitality that this island has to offer. And I think you have a really, really good example of one in the Watermill and Sally herself. So news now. Isle of Wight Distillery Company have got a new agreement to distribute Mermaid Gin in the USA, and Isle of Wight Tomatoes, the tomato stall, have got a range of their oils and vinegars and sauces into Selfridges, so that's good news too. And I think those things, in conjunction with talking to Sally, really represent why and what the podcast is all about. And coming up in the next podcast is Andrew Hodgson from the Isle of Wight Meat Company. And so I'm looking forward to that one and putting that one together, and also to working with isleofwight.com as we move forward. And thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope you'll tune in to the next one, which is all about rearing lamb, beef and pork here on the island. And yeah, it's quite fascinating, and another story that I think is worth telling. So look forward to having you listening again, and thanks very much, and enjoy the series. Bye. The Food and Music Podcast is brought to you by Paul Bell Chambers. It is available on Spotify, Apple, Google and Amazon, and a number of other platforms. Please subscribe and share with family and friends. Thank you very much for listening. Take care.